America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the No Boring Zone.
And greetings, patriots, friends, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from our affiliate in New York City, WWRL, from the fine studios here. Rennie Bishop getting me all set up, and Tommy running the studio. Things working just great, and we're really, really pleased to be here. We're in New York City because tonight there will be a screening of the Leonardo DiCaprio movie, The 11th Hour, and I'll be giving you more details on that as we go through the program, but I will be there doing a question and answer afterward. It'll be at the Landmark Theater down in the Village, so it's going to be great fun. And then tomorrow night, a discussion about SAME with the Screening Liberally group. They won't be showing the entire movie, but some selected clips, and we'll be having a discussion. That'll be tomorrow night, Tuesday night. And I'll be broadcasting tomorrow from Air America's headquarters. Right now, Michael Chapman is with us. He is a managing editor at the Cybercast News Service, CNS News, one of the more conservative websites, for lack of a better phrase, and I think you would call it that. Michael Chapman, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. CNSnews.com, by the way, the website for people who want to check it out. And Matt Purple is writing over at CNS News, one of your correspondents. And he really has a burr under his saddle about the fact that the banana slugs, I believe that's the mascot of the University of California at Santa Cruz, don't seem to be all that enthusiastic about federal military recruiters showing up at the job fairs on campus. And the Young America's Foundation, which, interestingly, YAF, is not Young America's for Young Americans for Freedom. This must be a new cutout organization? Is this a new one that's just been created?
No. The Young America's Foundation has been around, I think, since the late 50s or early 60s.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, I know Young Americans for Freedom. I mean, we used to see them in college campuses back in the 60s, but I've not heard of this. Okay, I'll take your word for it. Anyhow, they have filed a lawsuit against the Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, asking him to, or trying to compel him, to enforce the Solomon Amendment. The Solomon Amendment basically that says that any campus that receives federal funds that does not allow federal recruiters on the grounds loses those federal funds. So give us the story, first of all, Michael.
Well, sure. Just to make one thing clear, though, I think it's not just allowing them on the grounds. It's the ability to participate equally with other employers, and I think that's what the Young America's Foundation is complaining about. But to get to the story, at the University of California, Santa Cruz, military recruiters, I believe Army, Navy, as well as the Marine Corps, back in April 2005, set up a table with other employers to provide information to students who are interested in the military. And a group of demonstrators came in, surrounded their table, locked arms, and then another group outside basically barricaded the building and prevented people from coming in. And the university officials asked the military recruiters to leave, which they did, and that was in 2005. And then in April 2005...
Now, wait a second. The university officials asked the military recruiters to leave?
Yes.
Because the university is saying that they never asked anybody to leave, that they've been in full compliance. They're saying that the military recruiters decided upon their own volition to leave.
Well, that's as far as I know, that's...
And that's what it says in your article, in fact.
Well, yes, but I just read a recent piece from the lawyer who's representing the Young America's Foundation, and this is what he's claiming, and I guess this may or may not be settled in court, but he's claiming that University of California officials asked the military recruiters to leave. Whether or not that's exactly what happened, I don't know. I wasn't there. But that's what the lawyer for YAF is saying. And then there was a similar incident in April of 2006 where they had a job fair. And this time the university, they just said, well, we got to provide more security for these military folks because they expected a demonstration. And certainly there was a demonstration, and they had actually put the military folks into a separate room. But protesters broke in. There was a fairly large-size riot, from what I understand from the news reports. There were threats made, and apparently one of the recruiters' vehicles was damaged. And again, university officials asked the recruiters to leave the campus, which they did. And then again, in the, for this year's job fair, which was scheduled, I think, for March or April, the recruiters declined to attend because they believed that the school could not provide the security and the atmosphere, the equal participation atmosphere that they're supposed to provide if they receive federal funds. So that's what the story is about, basically what happened. And now the Young Americas Foundation has filed suit against the Defense Department, which is responsible for enforcing the Solomon Amendment. And YAF is saying that either you enforce this amendment, we're gonna press it to see that federal funds are taken away.
When was the Solomon Amendment put into law, do you know?
I think it was 1996, if I remember correctly. And the Clinton administration, from what I understand, there were some complaints back then. Yeah, the law was enacted in 1996. But again, according to the lawyer for YAF, the Clinton administration, despite some incidents at certain campuses, did not enforce it either, meaning the Defense Department under the Clinton administration.
So, right.
Yes.
Right, which was run by a Republican, by the way, Bill Clinton.
Yes, yes.
I mean, for the record.
Yes, that's true.
So I guess the bottom line here, Michael, is, you know, what part of the First Amendment, you know, the right of people to have free speech. What part of the First Amendment do you guys dislike here? I mean, you've got protesters showing up saying, hey, we don't like what you have to say. You've got the recruiters saying, you know, in some cases, we'll stick around and say it anyway, damn it. And in other cases saying, all right, we're out of here. And, you know, assuming for a moment that your news article is correct and that the military folks chose to leave, and I would be astounded if any college would be so stupid as to, in the face of this law, throw military recruiters off campus. You know, really your objection here is to the fact that people are objecting to military recruiters on campus, isn't it?
Well, there are two issues. One is the main news story itself, which is looking at the Solomon Amendment and whether or not it should be enforced or can be enforced. And YAF is saying, you know, it hasn't been enforced. You guys need to enforce it because federal funding is going to this state university. And if you're going to receive federal funds, certain strings are attached. And these are the strings. Blah,
but the
blah,
Solomon
blah.
Amendment doesn't say you got to be nice.
No, I agree with you there. And for our story, it's not a question of the First Amendment. I'm all for people, you know, expressing their views, diversity of views. But what struck me about this story is the blatant hypocrisy of the liberals and the left on this issue. I mean, they all claim to be for diversity of ideas, diversity of opinions, all sorts of different groups can work together and can talk about and spread their views. But when it actually comes down to putting people on the ground and expressing their views, they don't want to just have a demonstration. They want to shout about it, surround them, lock arms, shut them down, shut down the building, potentially damage.
Well, first of all, hang on just a second here, Michael. First of all, you have a substantial minority of Republicans who are opposed to this war. You have Republicans who are opposed to military recruiting on campus. You've got Republicans like Mitt Romney saying to his five sons, no, I don't want you guys to join the military. You can serve your country better by helping me. I mean, you've got a lot of Republicans who are taking this position. This isn't some big liberal conspiracy, and it's not the liberals. These are anti-military folks, arguably anti-war, but my guess is probably even beyond that, some folks who just don't like the fact that we have this massive military-industrial complex, that the United States spends more on military weaponry than every other country in the world combined, and they're trying to take a stand.
Well, I'm all for people who, you know, they want to oppose the war, express their opinion. I'm all for that. But the question, again, is you have a law, you have a Solomon Amendment, which says you have to provide an equally appropriate atmosphere for employers. Now, people can demonstrate against that, and people can file a lawsuit and say they weren't sticking to the law. But my point, again, is that if you oppose the war, if you oppose the military, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever, that's fine. But there's a difference between having a demonstration and actually surrounding the table, locking arms, and then barricading the building and preventing students from coming in.
Which is why the second day the university said, we're going to provide you guys with security so this won't happen again.
But it did happen. It did happen again, and there was a small riot, and they had.
So you think they should bring in the National Guard from Kent State?
No, I don't believe in Kent State, and I knew that was probably going to come up. But my point is that if you're going to provide these types of atmospheres for employers to come in and sell their wares, then you have to provide security and some sort of protection for them. Otherwise, you shouldn't receive the federal funds.
Well, but it's essentially a hostile environment. You've got, I believe it was Norman Solomon went out and at young Republican rallies asked, why aren't you in the military? None of them wanted to join the military either.
Well, but, that's true. That's a whole other issue. And
yeah. CNSNews.com.
Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Leave them alone, too. Look out. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from WWRL, our New York City affiliate. And greetings to LaToya, who's running the board now. And thank you very kindly. It's great stuff here. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone. Beautiful studios here at WWRL. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, toll-free nationwide for Air America Radio. Also, if you'd like to drop into our live chat room and say hi, and I'm hanging out there as well, in fact, typically do every day during the show, you will find links to that both at airamerica.com on the Tom Hartman page and over at tomhartman.com, where you'll also find links to my writings, my books, and a separate message board that we have on a whole wide variety of topics. We're going to give you just a quick recap of the news here, a little more of it at the bottom of the hour, but two quick stories that are over at the thinkprogress.org site that are very germane to the fact that there is this lawsuit about college recruiting. The first, which is sourcing out of, I'm not sure where they're sourcing this from, but in any case, the Army has nearly exhausted its fighting force and its options if the Bush administration decides to extend the Iraq buildup beyond next spring. The Army's 38 available combat units are already mobilized, all of them, leaving no fresh troops to replace five extra brigades that Bush sent to Baghdad this year. Meanwhile, in Iraq, the second provincial governor in 2 weeks was assassinated. This mounting tension between rival Shiite armed factions and Sunni armed factions. We, of course, have been traditionally arming the Shiites, who are affiliated with the new government, and the Sunnis, who were affiliated with the old government. Now we're arming them, and they're just apparently increasingly using their weapons against each other. We have 190,000 weapons missing. And when we find these weapons, we have no idea who we gave them to, because nobody ever came up with the bright idea of when you give a weapon to somebody, you write down their name and the serial number. Gee, you'd think it's common sense. No, sorry. That's too common sense for the guys who are running this war. 1-866-303-2270. Gary in Detroit, Michigan, listening on 1310 AM WDTW. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hi. Hello. Is this Tom Hartman?
It is, and you're on the air.
Oh, okay. I wanted to comment on this, on what the man said about this being a free speech issue or a First Amendment right issue. This is an illegal war we're talking about. Recruiting for an illegal war, recruiting criminals, is not really a First Amendment right. Yeah, I think he's a little confused on that point.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, I guess the basis of our discussion assumed that what the military was doing is legal.
Yeah,
and I think you can build a strong case that it is illegal, but here's the problem. It's not really illegal until, I mean, this is a nation where you're innocent until proven guilty, even if you're the President of the United States. It's not really legal until some court has determined that it's legal until,
you remember what Martin Luther King said about being silent in the face of murder.
Yeah, it is morally illegal. I will absolutely agree with you there, and I think
I would say even troops have an obligation to being morally right in this.
Yeah,
in fact, that would save the whole war if they were morally right. That would save everything, wouldn't it?
And many have. Over 5,000 troops have now defected to Canada. This is one of the highest rates of defections or going AWOL or whatever you call it, when people deserting in some cases, but mostly, you know, before deployments, people leaving the country that we've seen since Vietnam.
Well, let me have one more comment here, Tom. I'm a little harder on the troops than most people. I, unlike most people, don't support the troops because, well, in fact, I call them the dupe troop, because they're duped into an illegal war, and many of them knowingly are duped into an illegal war. And I think that if you say it honestly, if you explain it to them honestly, they have no option but to try their best to get out of it.
Yeah, the problem, though, Gary, is that a lot of these kids came from families where they weren't getting honest information. They're watching Fox News. They're not getting honest information. They're living in communities where there's honest information available.
I suppose that's true to every criminal in prison, though.
No, it's not true to every criminal in prison. Arguably true to some criminals in prison, but I'm not going to call these guys criminals. I'm sorry. Ain't going to happen.
But
I get your point. I get your point, but I would say they have been duped. Charles in San Leandro, California. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind today?
I think we ought to pull the California National Guard out of Iraq so that we can protect recruiters on college campuses. That way we'd kill two birds with one stone.
What an elegant solution, Charles. Let's bring the National Guard back from Iraq to protect the college recruiters. That's brilliant. That's brilliant. If I had a prize today, you'd win it. Charles, thanks a lot. Thanks for listening on The Quake. Art in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Art, what's up?
Yes, Tom. This is going to take longer than one sentence.
Okay, Art, I'm sorry. I missed the time cue there. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll pick you up on the other side of the
book. Done and done.
Stick around. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio program. Stick around.
He's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will kill you for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan, and he thinks we'll put an end to war this way.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be nice? World War I was billed as the war to end all wars. World War II, the war to end wars. Immediately we were in Korea, and then Vietnam, and now here, and of course all the little, strutting operations, Reagan in Grenada and Margaret Thatcher in the Falklands, and on and on and on it goes. I'm telling you, what's going on our college campuses right now is nothing, nothing compared to what you would see if we had a national draft. If we had a national draft, particularly if it was actually a fair and reasonable draft, like they have in most European countries, well, not just European countries, many countries all around the world, where everybody, in some cases it's everybody, like in Israel and in Sweden, in other cases, well, Sweden's debating it right now, in other countries, it's all males, once they turn 17, 18, whatever, get out of high school, have to give a year of service to their country. Now, it doesn't have to be in the military. In fact, very often it's volunteering with a nonprofit organization, showing up at a church, something like that, a hospital, working with some legitimate charity, but give a year to your country. Or going overseas, join the Peace Corps kind of thing, and do good work. And it's a rite of passage for young adults. It's an opportunity to feel a bond to the nation that has given you, 10, 15 years of education. It's an opportunity to pay that back. And you don't end up with the problem that Jefferson so eloquently warned about, which is that if you have an all-volunteer army, you're going to have an all-professional army. Everybody in the army is going to be one of two, it's going to be one of two things. Either you're going to have people who, because the army is paying well enough, and it's just starting to now, $50,000 signing bonuses. Either it's, as Jefferson said, people willing to be shot at for a sixpence, which he thought was a horrific thing, or it is a professional army, which is more likely to engage in something like Musharraf did in Pakistan, a military coup. So, frankly, in my opinion, the solution to a lot of this is for us to actually institute a national service program. I've been an advocate of this for a long, long time. It goes back to the beginning of our country. I agree with Jefferson. We should not have a military-industrial complex or an army during times of peace. We should have an Air Force and a Navy, and we should have a national service program, and everybody should be a member of that. By the way, tonight, just a quick heads up, tonight, Monday night here, August 20th, following the 8 o'clock show at the Landmark Sunshine Theater in the East Village in New York City, for our listeners on WWRL here in New York City or people listening on satellite radio or catching the stream, at the 8 o'clock movie, after the 8 o'clock movie at 9:45, I'll be showing up and doing a live question and answer after Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, The 11th Hour. And it should be a hoot. And then I'll stick around and I'll introduce the next movie, the 10-something showing, 10:05 show, I guess it is. But for those who show up for the 8 o'clock show at the Landmark Sunshine in the East Village, I will be there. And then tomorrow night, I'll be at Screening Liberally, which will be over at the Tank on Church Street. They're not going to show the entire movie. They're just going to show some clips from it, and we're going to sit around and discuss it, hang out with it. And that's tonight, if you want to come see the movie, you get the privilege of paying for a ticket to get in. Hey, it's a movie. Tomorrow night, because they're not showing the whole movie, just a few clips, and it's going to be a discussion. And it's the New York City ScreeningLiberally.com is the website, ScreeningLiberally.org. You can go over to their website and you can RSVP for that if you'd like to show up at no cost and just hang out with me and a bunch of the folks from Screening Liberally to discuss the movie. But if you're going to discuss the movie tomorrow night, go see it tonight at the Landmark Sunshine down in the East Village. It's 143 East Houston Street. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Frank in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Frank, welcome to the program.
Tom, thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. Love your book, Screwed. I sent a copy to my dad. He loved it.
Oh, great. Thank you.
I'm a 12-year veteran of the military. Last 6 years, I've been a reservist. I got recalled in 2003 for the war, and the previous caller made a point saying soldiers are criminals. We're not criminals. A lot of people, even the ones that were there when we were on theater, we had our misgivings about the war, some of us. But, you know, that's not our job. Our job is to go there and we're a tool of the national policy that's set forth by the people that are voted into office.
Exactly.
The American people. And I thought that guy that called, I thought he didn't even vote.
So, yeah, well, the bottom line is if there are criminals to define here, I mean, look back at the Nuremberg trials. It was not the military guys who got put on trial. It was the civilians who were running the government. If we are in a criminal war and there are criminals to be defined and a court of law decides that there are criminals, those criminals are going to be George Bush, Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, and company right on down the line in the civilian chain of command because the military does what they're told. And that's what a military is supposed to do. You do not want a situation where your military is second-guessing the civilian command. That is almost by definition a military coup. And that's why I disagreed with that caller. And I said, I'm sorry, I'm not willing to call our soldiers criminals. I wasn't willing to call them that during Vietnam as much as I disagreed with that war, and I'm not willing to call them that now. The criminals are in the White House and in Congress.
And I appreciate that. I really do. And I just like to tell everybody, get out there and vote. Change it.
There you go. Yeah, because that's it. And not just vote. I mean, voting isn't enough. We have to get out there and get active. Go to democracyforamerica.com, you know, show up at the local Democratic Party meeting, the Green Party meeting, the Republican Party meeting. Get inside, get involved. We need to take over these parties. Frank, thank you for the call, and thanks for your service to our country.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you very much. Thanks for what you're doing.
Yep. Will in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Will.
Oh, hello. I'm thinking about this savings and loan crisis, and I think that it's not...
Well, see, it's not a savings loan crisis this time. That was during the senior Bush administration. During the junior Bush administration, it's the banking crisis, although it's not the actual banks that are in trouble. It's the companies that are engaging in banking-type activities, like KKR, who are not actually legal banks and who don't have the $100,000, you know, FISA insurance. And this is Paul Krugman did a great op-ed about this in today's New York Times.
And yesterday's Times, all the talk is about bailing out these hedge funds.
Right.
And I think it's unfair that the people who actually took out the loans aren't getting bailed out. I think that the hedge fund managers have the knowledge. They're supposed to have the knowledge to understand what they're getting into.
Well, to buy into a hedge fund, up until very recently, you had to have $250,000 just to buy in. You had to have $1 million net worth before they'd even talk to you. So it's not like these guys are idiots. It's not like they don't have, you know, some money at risk, but also some money that they can fall back on. And I absolutely agree. I think that if the government is going to intervene in this beyond, you know, lowering the discount rate that banks, the interloan bank discount rate, which is what so far Bernanke's done. He hasn't lowered the Fed funds rate yet. But if they're going to do anything of any substance, what they should do is they should pass a law that says that anybody who can't afford to pay their mortgage and got stuck with one of these mortgages, the original issuer of that mortgage is now the owner of that mortgage and the owner of that house, and that person can rent that house at the prevailing market rate. Let a genuine appraiser determine the prevailing market rate for rental, can rent that house for as long as they want, literally, with an option to buy it at any time if they can get a serious mortgage from a real bank. And, instead of throwing people out of their houses and bailing out the fat cats, let's bail out the average guy who got suckered into one of these things.
They're talking 1.7 million foreclosures in 2 years.
Yes.
If you were to say, let's average $500 a month to help these people pay the increased cost on their ballooning payments, that'd be $10 billion annually.
Yeah.
Countrywide Financial just borrowed $11 billion to keep going.
Yeah.
It seems like a drop in the bucket, and it would float the whole economy, get the stock market back. And I don't hear anybody talking about this sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, you hear me talking about it. and you'll hear other people talking about it if you and I keep talking about it and writing letters to the editor and calling in to talk shows and things like that. Will, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Jeff in Denver, Colorado, listening on 760 AM. Hey, Dan. Hey, Denver. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how's it going today? I love your show.
Thank you.
1 minute.
I love that Universal Soldier song. That's a great song.
It is.
Hey, that guest that you had on, I love his argument, and I'm for equal opportunity with employers, but, you know, if I get a job with IBM and IBM says, you know what, I'm going to send you to Iraq and there's a chance that you could get killed,
You can quit your job.
I can quit and go home.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're not letting anyone out.
Yeah, you're right. There is a qualitative difference between the military and between, just general employment. And it's one of the reasons why a lot of colleges, particularly in the post-Vietnam era, a lot of colleges said that, the military recruiters were not welcome on college campus job fairs because they didn't consider it a job. It was something uniquely different. There were some different qualities to it than just being a job.
Yeah, and they're flat out lying to people. You know, they're saying, no, we won't send you to Iraq. We'll send you to Korea.
Yeah.
Then they send him to Korea for 3 weeks, and then they go, oh, your orders have changed. You're going to Iraq.
Right, yeah.
But you're already in Korea, so what are you supposed to do at that point?
Point made, Jeff. And I'd like to know a little more history on the Solomon Act. I think I'll do some digging around here during the break, and maybe some of the folks in the chat room have some information. Where did this thing come from? And should military recruiters be allowed and required, should colleges be required by law to allow military recruiters on campus? Good question. 45 minutes past. And frankly, I don't think that they should be required to by law. I'll be right back.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Love this song. I remember this song was playing the first time I ever danced really close with a girl in high school. And we all thought we knew what the lyrics were, but it turns out that Jack Eli, this is a Portland band, Portland, Oregon band, the Jack Eli, the guy who voiced the thing, had just had his braces tightened, and so he was mumbling. But anyhow, the Kingsmen, Louie Louie, and it's some sort of significant anniversary of it here, because the town of Spanaway, Washington just had 1,000 guitarists show up last weekend for it. And so our Louie Louie moment. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Here's the deal with the Solomon Law. The Solomon Law, first passed in, the Solomon Amendment is named after Congressman Gerald B.H. Solomon. First passed in 1994. Barney Frank amended it in 99, pushing through an exemption for federal monies used for financial aid, so that wouldn't be lost. But then in 2001, the Republicans in the House Armed Services Committee set it up so that an entire university could lose its funding if any of its schools blocked access to recruiters. Because a lot of universities were saying, okay, well, our law school, you know, you can't recruit there, or our medical school, you know, you can't recruit there. And this just made it all the way across the board. And where it really runs into a collision is that the military not only is, as one of our callers pointed out, an institution that you can't simply quit like any other recruiter. In other words, you can't say just take this job and shove it to your employer at the military. But it's also an institution that illegally discriminates in the minds of many. The Boston College of Law, for example, the Boston College Law School, has in 2004 argued before the Third U.S. Circuit of Court that because the military has this don't ask, don't tell policy, which is essentially discriminating against gays, that policy conflicts with the university's non-discrimination policies, and therefore they shouldn't be forced to have that institution on campus. And ultimately they lost that case. There's another case in 2006, Rumsfeld versus Fair in the Supreme Court, and at least three institutions, the Vermont Law School, New York Law School, and the William Mitchell College of Law, have declined to allow military recruiters, thus lost their federal funds and said, okay, we're going to continue. But you've got groups like Harvard. Harvard gets $400 million a year from you know, federal funds. So they're not all that enthusiastic about losing it all. And here you have, you know, folks like me taking this interesting position, perhaps, A, that we should have a draft, and that it should be a national service program, not just a military draft, and B, the colleges should be free to tell military recruiters, or frankly any other employer, whether or not they want to let them recruit on campus. Period. Art in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Art, what's up?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, hello, Tom. It's Art.
Hey, Art.
Hey, listen, back in the day when all the recruiters in the world were on every college campus, this is long before there was any objection to it, all of the most influential Republicans today simply walk right past them. They didn't volunteer.
Yeah.
And
Paul
I got
Rowe,
a list
Dick
of
Cheney,
them here.
You know, you've got a list.
I got a little list, beginning with the president, and his brother Jeb, and his chief of staff, Joshua Bolten, and his former chief of staff, Andrew Card, and the counsel to the president, Fred Fielding, the counselor to the White House, Ed Gillespie, the departing counselor to the White House, Dan Bartlett, press secretary, Tony Snow, Karl Rove, Douglas Feith, Richard Pearl, vice president, Dick Cheney, his chief of staff, David Addington, they walked right past it. His former chief of staff, Scooter Libby, former CIA chief, George Tenet, walked right past. Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, the House Minority Whip, Roy Blunt, former House Speaker, Denny Hastert, former House Majority Leader, Tom DeLay.
I get it, Art, and I get it. I'm sure people can Google the list quite easily. And so, you know, maybe this is a tempest in the teapot, since the Republicans were so very, very good at getting out of, you know, at avoiding military service back in the 60s and 70s. Maybe we shouldn't be worrying about it. I don't know. It's an interesting one. Art, thanks a lot for the call. Steve in Long Island, New York. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Tom. Yes, I'm just calling regarding the draft that you currently have a topic on.
Yes, sir.
I really doubt that there will be any draft because of the enormous amount of money that there is being made in a war currently waged in Iraq and all around the world. And in my opinion, logistics and procurement, manufacturing of these weapons, and even down to the guards, it's at the gates. I have a son-in-law that's currently serving in Iraq, and every base that I had visited, they have a private guards at the gates. Mm-hmm. And since there is so much money being made out of this, I doubt very much that there will be a draft.
Yeah.
So that's my opinion on this.
This has become a huge industry, a huge business. Well said, Steve. And frankly, I agree with your skepticism. I don't think there'll be a draft. I don't think there'll be an end of the war either, because there's so much money to be made. Tom in San Diego, California. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, I'm calling about your caller a bit ago who basically was accusing the military of being criminals, and he didn't support
the
troops.
As I said, I disagree with him. I think he's off base.
Yes, I'm very happy about that. But I'm a 20-year veteran, chief retired from the Navy. I've been in combat twice where I actually saw who I engaged and killed. Now, something to keep in mind for civilians like that caller, it is not the military's job, because the feeling I got was if all the military just laid down their arms, the war would be over. No, in a wartime, those people would be put against a wall and shot for treason.
Yeah.
The military members have protect the Constitution. It's the civilians who protect the military members by holding Congress, Senate, and the President to task.
Right. So if there's a criminal to be identified, it's the caller. It's us. It's we the people, because we failed to stop this war. Tom, good point. Thank you, and thank you for your service to the country. 57 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio. The Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Talk radio for the rest of us.
1 hour, 24 minutes to go until the Bush administration has to turn over to Congress documents on their spying on possibly you and me. Possibly they're spying on Ted Kennedy. Well, we know, for example, that before this
terrorist surveillance program
came into being, this so-called program, that out of Orrin Hatch's office, one of his assistants had hacked into Ted Kennedy's computer for over a year and was reading the emails of Chuck Schumer and Ted Kennedy and other senior Democrats and pulling out of those emails the points that they were going to use to go after the Bush judicial nominees and prosecutorial nominees. And all of a sudden, on the floor of the Senate, the Democrats are getting blindsided by Republicans trotting out these very well carefully rehearsed and very well written points that rebutted the points that the Democrats were going to make before the Democrats even made them. How'd they know this? They must be psychic. The Democrats were starting to think that maybe the Republicans had hired Uri Geller. You know, they got a guy over there who knows what we're thinking. It must be. No, it was really simple. They were spying on the Democrats. And Bush has been spying on people for a good long time now, ever since 2001, perhaps before 2001. We still don't know. And he has up until 2:30 this afternoon Eastern Time. It is 1:07 Eastern Time right now. He has until 2:30 Eastern Time to submit these documents to Congress so that Congress can do its constitutionally required oversight. And Fred Fielding, Richard Nixon's former lawyer, now Bush's lawyer, says, we're not sure that we can get these things together in time, you know. There's a lot of paperwork we got to go through and a lot of things we got to look at and decide what we're going to... And so what's Congress going to do when the deadline is met? Well, there is a jail cell in the basement underneath the House of Representatives. There is a jail cell down there. Hasn't been used since 1934 or 38, I forget which year, but since the 1930s. It was used quite regularly in the 1800s. And they can say, okay, that's it. Inherent contempt. I'm not sure that they could put the president in there because of the separations of power thing, but they could certainly put in there any of the people who are charged with turning over these documents. The head of the NSA, the head of the so-called Homeland Security Department, arguably the head of the CIA. It'll be interesting to see how this thing plays out. Should we have a military draft? I'm telling you, if we had a military draft, we would not be in Iraq right now. It's just that simple. And I'm talking about a national service program here. And I got a note during the, and one of the folks in the chat room, various people talking about, well, you know, you don't want amateurs going off to fight wars. No, you don't. So you have people go through a basic training program, and every year they go, you know, for another training program. And like the Second Amendment says, they keep a weapon in their home or in a local militia in an available place, local fire station, something like that. And in time of national emergency, if we are attacked, then like Switzerland, the entire nation is the military. Now, what country is going to take you on if the entire country is the military? And for that matter, what kind of military dictator, what kind of bozo like Musharraf is going to take on, is going to overthrow the government if the entire country is the military? I realize this is an unpopular position. People say a military draft is slavery. You could argue that so is paying taxes. I would submit that both are the price of living in a civil society. That if you want to use, if we collectively want to use the benefits of the society, there are certain prices for that. If you want to have public schools, you want to have public streets, you don't want them owned by private corporations who charge you a toll every time you go through a traffic light, there's a price to pay. It's called taxes. If we want to live in a secure world, are we going to live in a secure world that is secure by virtue of the fact that we have large corporations that we give lots of money to and we fight lots of wars in strange places because it's where the business interests run, to paraphrase Jackson Brown? Is that what we're going to do, or are we going to live in a secure world because we the people defend ourselves collectively? It just makes sense to me that we have a national service program, and B, that we radically ramp down our military and our military industrial complex when we're not during time of conflict, and C, that we stop our pathological addiction to fossils that were made 300 million years ago. We're like a bunch of maniacal, obsessive, compulsive disorder fossil hunters. We're traveling all around the world. We're spending hundreds of billions of dollars in military, the blood of our soldiers, to search for and protect fossils. I mean, can you imagine? It's like the Leakey family. Yeah, we're going to find fossils, and we're going to get a military of 100,000 people. We're going to take over Kenya and find all those hominid fossils. Come on! 300 to 400 million years ago, plants captured in the sea and on land, nearly 100 million years worth of sunlight, locked it up with a chemical reaction called photosynthesis, pulling carbon out of the atmosphere in the form of carbon dioxide and combining that carbon with water and air, hydrogen and oxygen, forming carbohydrates, carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, and thus forming plant matter. And the stuff in the seas got compressed and turned into oil, and the stuff on land got compressed and turned into coal, and now we've got all these carbohydrates, and we have become addicted to them. And thus we have this bizarre military, and we're going all over the world protecting this. And, you know, let's break our addiction to fossil fuels. It's really simple. It's the essence of Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth. It's one of many issues touched on by the movie that picks up where Al Gore left off, Leonardo DiCaprio's brilliant new movie, The 11th Hour, that just opened Friday in New York and Los Angeles. tonight, and we'll be opening in other cities around the country over the following, over the next few weeks. And tonight I'll be at the open, at the screening. It actually opened on Friday. I'll be at a showing at the Landmark in the East Village, the Landmark Sunshine in the East Village. After the 8 o'clock show, I'll be doing a Q&A. Just some interesting things in the news here, in the science news. Blood glucose. You know, they talk about how if you walk, a 20 minute walk every day, it dramatically helps people from having all different kinds of illnesses and things. Well, this is fantastic. This is fascinating, rather. This is from the current issue of Science News. If your blood glucose is out of whack, the problem may be in your bones. In research, new research in mice shows that bone cells exert a surprising influence on how the body regulates sugar, energy, and fat. This is incredible. Cells in the bone produce a protein called osteocalcin. This causes beta cells in the pancreas to proliferate and produce extra insulin. It also causes fat cells to store less fat and release an enzyme called and release a compound, which helps the body regulate sugar and keeps fat mass low. Now, what stimulates bone cells to do this? Nobody's really sure, but and this is where I can say something Science News can't. I can speculate. I'll bet that just like we know osteoblasts, bone cells get harder and grow more healthy when they're subjected to regular impact, thus walking, for example, or running, or weightlifting for that matter, when they're put under pressure. Bone cells actually absorb more calcium. They become healthier. They become stronger. I'll bet that they also produce more osteocalcin. I'll bet this is why people who are in shape are less likely to have type 2 diabetes or be overweight. And it goes back to bone cells. It's not the amount of muscles you use. It's whether your bones are getting that regular whack, 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 whack that you get by walking. Just go walking 20, 30 minutes a day. This is amazing. They're even talking about, you know, isolating osteocalcin, this protein, and giving it to people to stop type 2 diabetes. Why not just tell them to walk? Well, I suppose you can make more money if you can isolate the drug and make it into a pill. Anyway, your calls on the draft and more when we come right back. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour. Boy, just when you thought it was safe to drink bottled water or bottled anything. I remember about 2 or 3 years ago, maybe it was a little longer than that, maybe it was 4 or 5 years ago, a series of studies came out that found that the plasticizers, the softeners that are used in certain types of plastic, so you know that kind of milky plastic that you see in some containers that's very soft and you squeeze it and you know, it easily squeezes. The agent that's called the plasticizer for that mimics certain human hormones, particularly estrogen. And there's a lot of concern that compound, that chemical building up in our bodies might be one of the things that is contributing to the fact that girls are experiencing menstruation 2 years earlier now than they were just 25 years ago or ever in the history of the human race. And it might have something to do with hormone-mediated cancers like breast cancer, testicular cancer, endometrial, uterine cancer, ovarian cancer, things like that. So everybody moved to polycarbonate plastic. That's the clear, rigid plastic that doesn't, you know, it kind of pops when you squeeze it rather than gently bending. And now they have discovered in polycarbonate plastic. I really am going to get to your phone calls in just a second. I know there's a lot of folks waiting, but I'm looking through the science news here. And it's not just epigenetic impacts. In other words, it prevented this chemical from altering the DNA of the animals. That's mind-boggling. The ones who didn't get the folate, and in other words, they're not eating their greens, but they are drinking out of plastic water bottles or plastic pop bottles or cans that are lined with plastic, The problems included cysts inside and outside the ovaries, development of glands at inappropriate places in the uterine lining, and polyps or other excessive tissue growth in or out of the uterine lining. Newbold's report group reports its findings online and in the upcoming Reproductive Toxicology Journal. Now, here's what's even more amazing. You say, well, yeah, they must have given them, what, a million times the normal human dose? No, they actually gave these rats lower doses than are normally found in average people walking around as a result of the pollution we're exposed to. The brief BPA doses delivered to the reproductive organs of affected mice, quote, I'm quoting from the study now in the National Academy of Sciences, are below the levels measured in the serum of human adults today. The consensus statement, this is where all the scientists agree, this is a peer-reviewed journal, the consensus statement concludes that animals can be harmed by BPA at body burdens below those found in most adult residents of industrialized nations. Now, if that ain't mind-boggling. Anyhow, that and politics to talk about. Raphael, in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Raphael, we have about a minute before we've got to take a break at the bottom.
No problem. You know, people complain about these kids killing people. What do you think basic training is? Basic training is brainwashing.
Yeah.
Most normal human beings don't go out and kill others just to kill them.
No, you have to be trained to do it. And war is this unique thing, and this is something that people like Bush and Cheney, who never served in combat, don't understand. War is where it is legal to kill people. It's where the normal rules of human conduct are totally suspended and really totally bizarre. It's organized mass murder.
Exactly. I mean, these kids don't know what they're doing. They've been indoctrinated. Yeah. That's what indoctrination is.
And the simple fact that no two democratic nations in the history of the world have ever declared war on each other and ever fought a war against each other should tell us the importance, not so much of running around to Iraq and saying, we're gonna shove democracy down your throat with the barrel of the gun, because that doesn't work, but rather of doing those things, those appropriate and healthy things around the world that do promote democracy. And frankly, you know, military dictatorships and military overthrows, whether it's in Libya or whether it's in Pakistan, frankly, I don't think are all that encouraging to democracy. Although we'll see. We'll see if Benazir Bhutto comes back. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Four minutes past the hour. Eat your greens. Drink from rigid plastic. This is startling. It's amazing what you learn when you read science news. Here's one last, and then I promise we'll go to one last. Bad news, good news. ADHD risk gene. First of all, 14 years ago, I proposed this Hunter-Farmer hypothesis about attention deficit disorder. I said it's not a disorder, it's a difference, and that it's a difference that would make people highly adaptive in a hunting-gathering world because they're scanning everything around them all the time and they make quick decisions and they love risk, but doesn't work really well in the farming world, in an agricultural world or an industrial world where you're not supposed to scan everything, you're supposed to focus, where you're not supposed to take risks, you're supposed to be very cautious, and you're not supposed to be very active, you're supposed to be, you know, stand in one place and put a screw in a bolt all day long. So anyway, I said it's not a difference. It's not a disease. It's a difference, number one. And number two, it's a genetic difference, and you'll find it in the genome. And I was proved right. And I finally, after 10 years of banging my head against the scientific community and publishing 7 books on the topic, finally last 2 years ago, the top geneticist in the United States, or one of the top geneticists in the United States, Robert Moises, came out and said, yes, that's by and large, that's the case. And I wrote a book based on that called The Edison Gene, which is my most recent book on ADHD. And it talks about the gene and how we identified this one gene, the DRD4 gene, the dopamine receptor number 4 gene, and the variation on it. Well, now science news comes out. They've found out something even more about this gene, a genetic variation that increased the risk for attention deficit hyperactive disorder also appears to help children grow out of their behavioral problems as certain brain structures normalize, new research suggests. In other words, they end up as adults pretty much like everybody else. It's really an interesting article. After 6 years of the study, 6 years in the study, 79% of the children with the gene variant had shed the diagnosis, compared with only 49% of the other children. Those are kids who have ADHD because they have lead poisoning or something, you know. So the vast majority of the kids who actually have the genetic form of the, quote, disorder, end quote, grow out of it, which is what we used to think. You know, they grow out of it. Yeah, it's true. Tim in Los Angeles. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Hello, Dr. Tom.
Yeah, right. Well, amateur scientist, shall we say.
Well, the reason why I'm calling is because I heard your story regarding folic acid.
Yeah.
And, you know, generally I'm a progressive liberal, but I read and I was hearing a program about Codex and about regulating the supplement world.
You know who's on that is Henry Waxman, unfortunately. He's a good guy in every regard on earth, except for the fact that he wants to regulate the vitamins I take, and that upsets me.
Well, that's a detriment, because if folic acid or eating greens could heal people, I think, like I said, I think it'll be a detriment for the people who are suffering from these different diseases, from not getting the needed vitamins.
Well, you know, they discovered about 8 or 10 years ago that a lack of folic acid in the diet is one of the reasons why, during pregnancy, is one of the reasons why neural tube deficiencies like spinal bifida, you know, where the tube that surrounds the spinal cord isn't completely closed, and children are born with their spinal cord open and their spine in some cases open and profoundly retarded as a result of it, and that's why. I guess it was about a decade ago. It was during the Clinton administration, as I recall. The FDA started requiring that folate or folic acid be put into, I used to always call it folic acid. I guess you're right. The correct pronunciation would be folic acid. Mm-hmm. Is now put into flour, into supplements, so that if people are going to eat their Twinkies as their meal, at least they'll get enough folate that they won't have children with birth defects. So, anyhow, is the government going to start regulating that next? God only knows. And here I guess I'm starting to sound like a conservative, but it's really a two-edged sword, Tim. There's a number of herbs that I don't take vitamins, but I do take herbs, and I take probably 10-15 pills a day of just different kinds of herbs because I figure a wide variety of plants is how humans evolved. And so I'm taking a little schizandra, and I'm taking a little milk thistle, and I'm taking a little St. John's wort, hypericum perfolia, and whatnot. I used to be an herbalist years ago. In fact, I used to own an herbal tea company back in the 70s.
Ooh.
And I was really into it. And still am, I guess. And one day I noticed that the schizandra capsules I was getting from a company that I'm not going to name on the air, instead of being nice and bright and having a good fragrance when you opened the capsule and, you know, all that, were old and gray, and it must have been like a 2 or 3 year old batch or something. Now, in that regard, I wouldn't mind if the FDA made sure that the schizandra, just to use that as an example, it's a Chinese herb, that particular herb that I'm getting actually, A, isn't laced with pesticides, B, really is what it says it is, and C, is, you know, packaged within the last year. I have no problem with the FDA doing that. But if the FDA says, I can't take it unless it's sold to me by Wyeth or Merck, I have to get a prescription from a doctor, then I've got a problem. And I think that we need to make that differentiation. Tim, thanks for the call and for bringing up the topic. Bruce in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bruce, or Bethlehem, the actual original pronunciation. What's up?
Yeah, Bethlehem. Anyway, you were talking about the draft.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you knew any anti-draft measures you could do before the fact.
Well,
great,
and I'd love to hear him in just a second. In my universe, we shouldn't have a draft. We should have a universal service program, and that 1 year of service can be anything from helping out in hospitals to helping build critical infrastructure to teaching children in schools to going overseas and building water purification plants in countries where they don't have sanitation to joining the military. Your choice. You've got a year. That's what you're going to do with it, and so. You know, frankly, I'm not sure that I would be enthusiastic about telling people how to get out of it. On the other hand, if we had a military draft like we had during Vietnam, which was very much alive and well when I was a kid, and, you know, when I was of draft age, then I can probably tell you things about how to get out of the draft than other people. I mean, you know, everybody I knew had some new scheme. I mean, we were keeping people up until 4 o'clock in the morning drinking, you know, for 4 days in a row with coffee and stuff. And I mean, you know, anyhow, your ideas.
Well, if people want to apply for conscientious objector status. They should write letters to other people and get them postmarked, stick them in another envelope and get it postmarked and send it off to them and tell them to hold that letter for them and not open it until they would get called before a draft board, if they would be called before a draft board. And then they would have this as documentary proof that they were anti-war, you know, to write a letter about how, about their anti-war feelings.
Right. Well, the way, you know, back in the 70s or 60s or whatever, I mean, you know, the way to do it was to join the Quakers, you know, to participate, you know, I mean, to actually join, because the Quakers were known to be pacifists. They have literally since the founding of this country been pacifists.
Yeah, I know Quakers, and, I was
ironically
a member of the, pardon me.
Go ahead, finish your sentence.
I was a member of the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, and I am I was wounded in Vietnam. And it's a tragedy. You know, like my ears ring to this day, unless I don't listen to them. But I mean, I feel like that's a part of my sensory and part of my life that's taken away from me. Yeah. And I really hate to see other people, you know, have that too. I agree with your idea of service, as long as it was applied universally.
Right.
And you couldn't buy your way out of it or something.
Yeah, no exemptions for George Bush and his kids.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bruce, and thank you for your service to our country. And I'm sorry to hear about your tinnitus, and I hope, you know, as time goes on, it gets better. But I appreciate I appreciate your call. Jim in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Portland, Oregon.
Oranian? Hey, it's raining here. It's damp. It was cold here in New York City as well. So.
Well, let me see. Eat your greens, grow your own. While I was following along that last conversation, just what you said, I'd like to see a universal public employment draft. The military is not the only public employment.
Right.
So
yeah, and I think people should be compensated for that year of service they're doing, which, again, would stimulate the economy, because we all know when you give money at the bottom of the economic ladder, it stimulates the economy more rapidly and more thoroughly and in a more healthy fashion right across the board than when you give money to rich, you know, millionaires and billionaires.
Not only that, the compensation could be tax-free. But I'm thinking of drafting policemen and people in the bureaucracy, maybe draft someone to be the governor. Draft teachers, draft street sweepers, draft our bureaucracy, draft everyone.
Well, Jim, what you've defined there, and I was there to see it, is the way the government worked in the Soviet Union and in East Germany, and I can't go along with that. I think the people should have a choice in the job that they do for the rest of their lives.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Talking about 1 year after you leave high school.
You'd have
you
a screening process.
And in exchange for that, by the way, you get free university education.
And I think do 2 years and give them an option. Give everyone an option between the ages of 15 and 30 or something like that, so they could choose. There'd be training programs for what they get into.
So you too can be the mayor?
I didn't hear you.
You too can be the mayor or the governor?
You too can be the mayor. Well, here, I'll tell you, I'll give you the model that I use, Tom, is the jury. We draft jurors and form a juror pool, and they get paid not very much. But people's lives are at stake with that responsibility to sit on the jury. So some model in between the military draft, which I would disagree with singly, and jury duty, there's a way that all of us could learn our civics firsthand.
Yeah, it makes good sense, Jim. Thanks a lot for the call. You know, in ancient Greece, it took 6,001 people to show up. This was a pure democracy to vote for something. And there was essentially a council, a parliament at the time. And the way that you served in their equivalent of the House of Representatives was by lottery. And so pretty much everybody at some point in their life served. And if you refused to serve, you were called an idiota, which is where the word idiot came from.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
9.5 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. Oh, my, what a day. Let's see, 1 hour? No, we're down to 40 minutes, 39 minutes before the Bush administration is in contempt of Congress. Let's see how this thing plays out. What do you think is going to happen? Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com on the line. Hey, Ellen, how's it going to...
What do I think is going to happen?
Yeah.
Not a whole lot. I think the Democrats are, not exactly strong on this, and they're fraidy cats. And I don't think they're going to really push them to the edge on it.
Do you think... People say the Democrats, and yet... When you say the Republicans, I think you can say that with some level of confidence. I mean, the Republican Party has particularly over the last 10 years, 12, 13 years, I'd say going back to the beginning of the Clinton impeachment, has purged itself of its members who might be independent thinkers, who might not be within the mainstream.
Right. I'm talking about the leadership when I'm talking about in terms of dealing with this particular issue.
But see, the leadership has to be responsive to its membership, and it has to have enough votes to be able to do something before they can proclaim that they're going to do it. And with the Republican leadership knows that 90% at least, probably 95% of their members are going to vote with them. I mean, you've got an Olympia Snowe out there and a Susan Collins and arguably a George Voinovich or maybe a Chuck Hagel, but they're the exceptions. They're few and far between, and in the House, they're virtually non-existent. On the other hand, couldn't you describe the Democratic Party, particularly in the House of Representatives, not so much as a party but as a coalition, because you've got all these various groups?
Well, it is a coalition, and the Republicans used to be that way, and then, frankly, Gingrich united them.
Right, right. And nobody has really pulled the Democrats together in this way, and in part because nobody has been willing to do the purge necessary because they haven't had the power. And frankly, it's not the way I think Democrats think. I think, Chris Matthews on his show last week made the comment that, and I thought it was actually an interesting one, he was making it somewhat derisively. He said, Republicans want a leader, Democrats want a meeting. And I think what that, you could translate that into Republicans want kingdoms, they want a king, and Democrats want democracy, and they want to have everybody to have a say. And so imposing discipline from the top down is kind of antithetical to the Democratic way of doing things.
And I do believe Pelosi has tried, but I also think that just like you and I talked about this FISA bill, and actually I was talking to my brother Michael about it over the weekend, that, it's a terrible bill. And the Democrats just said, oh, we're totally afraid to go home off the recess and have us be called weak on defense.
Well, I think it went beyond that. I think that they were afraid that there actually might be a strike on the United States. I think that's I talked to two members of Congress off the record. Thank you very much. And in both cases, they said, we have had intelligence briefings that have strongly suggested, I'm paraphrasing here, that during the summer recess, there may well be a strike on America. And I think this is a form of terrorism. I think that they were terrorized by this administration voting this way.
Although a lot of them also know not necessarily to believe everything that they hear from briefings.
Yeah, but you just never know when they're right.
You never do know, but that the last thing they want to do, you're right, for either reason, is to go home, have something either terrible happen, or have essentially, them being called wimps and weaklings, and that also isn't good for them. So.
Right.
I think they did that because they felt they didn't have a choice. I want to just point out, I'm sure you've been talking about it, but two very interesting editorials, of course. One by these various sergeants in the military in the New York Times yesterday, the war as we saw it. One of them has been injured in the head after he wrote this editorial. And, of course, the other one by Senator Lieberman today, talking about Al-Qaeda's travel agent. And, of course, this is the same day. Essentially, the subtitle is Damascus International Airport is a hub for terrorists.
Right, the road for victory goes through Syria. Oh, no.
Right. And, of course, today al-Maliki is in Syria. And just a few minutes ago, Gordon Jonrow on the plane to Canada, where the president will be today or tonight, this afternoon, tonight, and tomorrow morning, said that there was it was in Iraq's interest to have friendly neighbors, and of course, perhaps then al-Maliki could get Syria from stopping allowing people to use that as a staging area. So it really sounds to me like you have a good guy, bad, good cop, bad cop situation being set up by the government.
Well, or it could be. I mean, Syria, al-Maliki last week was in Iran, where he was called a good friend by Ahmadinejad. Now he's in Syria. These are both largely Shiite countries. He's a Shiite. Iraq has a majority of Shiites. It could just be that it's good real politic, you know, in the best tradition of Henry Kissinger, to form alliances with the countries that are most likely to come to your defense if the Sunni countries like Saudi Arabia decide to help out with the Sunnis in Iraq and try to invade and overthrow the Shia government.
Well, that's for sure. And, you know, I love to quote my favorite State Department. This is how they train State Department people. We never have permanent friends. We never have permanent enemies. We only have permanent interests.
And it's true. And somebody should tell George Bush. You know, the axis of evil. Remember what we were talking about, Libya? I mean, just 20 years ago, Ronald Reagan dropping bombs on Gaddafi's tent, killed his daughter. Killed his daughter, and this guy is now our ally?
Right.
I mean, you know, times change.
And as you and I talked about on Friday, Eritrea, that was our best friend, the best example of democracy happening.
Now they're a terrorist. Yeah, this breakaway state from Ethiopia. And Communist China, another good example as well. I mean, you know, although Communist China and the Soviet Union were just cooperating on joint military maneuvers last week. That's another thing to scratch your head about. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com on the web. Ellen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
57 minutes past the hour.
You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on Air America Radio. To the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
Is the mold out to get us? Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour, the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America. The mold, the fungus. Is it out to get us? You know, there are some fungi that are actually good for you. There's mushrooms that we eat. There's the whole mycelium thing. I mean, you know, it keeps trees can't exist without mold that are interpenetrating and surrounding the roots of their trees and things. But mold also has a dark side. And Kurt Billings and Leanne Billings are experts on this. They wrote a book called Mold: The War Within. Subtitled Hurricane Katrina Evacuees, share their story of recovery from mold and chemical exposure. The website, moldsolutions.info. Kurt and Leanne, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us. Tell us, first of all, what is the nature of the problem? When does mold go from being simply a ubiquitous part of our environment to becoming a toxin?
Usually when you get water damage within 24 to 72 hours, like Katrina. After the flooding, it became a huge problem because there was so much mold there that was dormant from all the nasty black molds you hear about, which is Stachybotrys and Aspergillus and others.
Back when I was in college, I did a research paper, a study on Aspergillus, and this is what's also known as black bread mold. I mean, it's ubiquitous, although it does cause a disease called aspergillosis that kills birds with some regularity and people rarely get. But why would these molds that the spores are pretty much everywhere all the time anyway, why would they start growing on things like wood when wood just, you know, is a normal thing? And in particular, things like sheetrock.
It's because of the water, flooding, pipe breaking. Our book is basically on the health effects after Katrina, but you can apply it to any wet building syndrome problem. You get enough water in there and dampness, this stuff will start to grow. And aspergillosis is actually more common than people think. People get it in their lungs and they have problems with it, and there's a lot of cases right now of mold poisoning, whether it be Stachybotrys or some of the other different molds from Hurricane Katrina. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of people sick from this.
some of the molds are toxigenic, and what that means is that they produce mycotoxins, and so you've got various health effects that can happen when mold starts to grow in an indoor environment, meaning that the mold spores and the mycotoxins that some of them release are confined inside the living space. People then inhale it, so they can get sick from the inhalation of the mold spores. They can have an infection that can develop, and they can also have poisoning that comes from the mycotoxins.
Right. So what's happened with the people post-Katrina? I mean, this is, first they were ignored by the Bush administration. Thousands, over 1,000 died, as I recall. Then the repairs have been largely ignored. We know that in Mississippi, where they have a Republican governor, there's been a lot of money pouring in particular to people who want to rebuild multi-million dollar condos and golf courses and things. But in Louisiana, with a Democratic governor and a largely poor population, not a whole lot has been happening, and not a whole lot has been hitting the ground, and you've got a lot of people who are living in housing that is still mold-infested, I'm assuming?
Absolutely. It's a major debacle. You look at just the sediment from the flooding. The government raised the arsenic standards so they didn't have to clean that up, and it goes on and on.
They raised the arsenic standards?
Yes, sir.
Arsenic causes cancer. It causes neurological damage in children. It lowers IQ. I mean, it's associated with a whole variety of toxic consequences, along with a lot of other metals.
Absolutely. And the government raised the standard so they didn't have to clean it up down
there. What did they raise it from and to?
I would have to run. My wife's grabbing the book to get the exact measurement for you. It's a 470-page book, and unfortunately, we are journalists, and we studied the reports that came out from the NRDC and other groups, such as Richard Lipsey. And one of the things that FEMA told the people when they went down to FEMA workers and Habitat for Humanity people, that mold can't hurt you. So they didn't send them down with chemical protection. And when you were down there, they didn't announce that you needed to wear protective gear or you needed to wear a face mask or anything. So most of the workers that went down there originally are getting sick now from the mold. And then you have mold in the streets because they haven't cleaned up the debris. They didn't properly remediate a lot of St. Bernard Parish. So they stripped the house to the bone, but they didn't remediate it, so it has the studs. So they put the sheetrock back up. A year later, they got the mold growing right back through the walls. So this is a major debacle in the Bush administration, and it's a major problem. And then you take the trailers and the formaldehyde and the mold that were in the trailers that FEMA knew beforehand when they sent them down there, and they just admitted that they covered this up. This is all in our book.
Yeah, this is incredible. And the book is called Mold and the War Within, and the subtitle, Hurricane Katrina Evacuees Share Their Story of Recovery from Mold and Chemical Exposure. Tell us some of these stories. We're talking with Kurt and Leanne Billings, the authors of the book. Tell us some of these stories. Make this real for us.
One of the things that we're concerned about is that a lot of the funds that didn't come into the area to help people rebuild their houses. We've got the
Road to Home
grants that are going to be released now.
2 years after.
Right, 2 years later, and those are for homeowners, which is great, but in the meantime, for 2 years, these homeowners have been forced to live in unhealthy environments full of mold. Most of those homes down there have been contaminated from mold. The other issue is that if you were not a homeowner and you're a renter, these grants will not apply. So what's happening to all the people who are renting contaminated, mold-infested rentals?
And then you have all the at-risk kids and the lower-income kids from Louisiana having to go to the schools that are filled with mold because they haven't remediated them. The trailers that they put up were basically the same trailers for schools that they gave the people to live in. They're full of formaldehyde and mold. So the childhood asthma rate has gone up by 3 times. You're having
300%?
Yeah.
Wow.
We also have a lack of physicians down there. They've lost 3,000 doctors in the Gulf area down there that was affected by Katrina. So we don't have doctors to even help these people. And the doctors that are there really aren't trained in mold and chemical exposures.
How many people are we talking about being affected?
There was 1.5 million affected by Katrina.
the important thing, too, is that someone could be evacuated out, like our family. We were evacuated out. We became sick from our the mold and chemical exposure that we came in contact with. We were in many states away, sick, very sick, getting sicker and sicker. So it's not just the people that immediately returned to the New Orleans area and the parts of Mississippi that were affected, but people who were evacuated out can also be sick from the exposure that incurred during and after the hurricane and not realize or understand why they are sick.
Yeah, in fact, mold poisoning, I know of one person who experienced a mild liver failure that ultimately was attributable to mold poisoning. They thought it was too much drinking or something. Another person who had a lung disease that was misdiagnosed as possibly being some form of cancer of the lung, and it turned out that it was some variation on aspergillosis. I mean, these mold diseases show up in a whole variety of strange ways.
Absolutely. Mine showed up by the mold attacking my thyroid, and my heart level started to jump around, and they thought I was going to have a heart attack because my thyroid would go extremely high, and then it would drop, and my heart would go extremely high, and then it would almost stop, and it would come back.
We talked
about... Is this the result of your exposure? Pardon me, Leanne. I'm curious just to follow up on that question,
sure.
The comment that Kurt made. Is that a consequence of exposure down in Louisiana?
Yes.
Wow.
Mold will attack your thyroid. It's called thyroiditis, but we didn't find that out until we did an extreme amount of research, what we have put in the book. We put the research that we thought out in the book that addresses the medical misdiagnosis that happened to our family and many, many other families, the medical mistreatments. We've got all of that highly documented in the book so other people can read about it, hopefully avoid some of the pitfalls that have happened to folks from Katrina in the future for future natural disasters.
Wow. So we're talking with Kurt Billings and Leanne Billings. The website, moldsolutions.info. The book is Mold, The War Within. Hurricane Katrina evacuees share their story of recovery from mold and chemical exposure. This is something you've got to read. Kurt, Leanne, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And for writing a great book. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-303-2270. Our phone number. Back with your calls.
Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
Always a good idea. Actually, sometimes you want to share your visions. You want to say, yeah, I'm going to change the world, and here's how. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. Special thanks to LaToya and Tommy and Rennie here at WWRL for providing a hospitable environment in their spiffy studios in Manhattan for us to do this show from. And to Carmen and Chris over at Air America running the board. I'll be there Tuesday and Wednesday and back in Portland Thursday and in San Francisco on Friday. In San Francisco, I'll be there for the opening of Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, The 11th Hour. Tonight, I'll be at a screening or a showing of it, the 8 o'clock showing. Afterwards, I will be there doing a question and answer for folks who want to stick around and have a conversation about the movie. And then I'll introduce, basically say hi to the folks before the 10:05 or 10:15 show. I'm not sure exactly when that is, starts. And that's at the Landmark Sunshine Theater in the East Village. That's down on 143 East Houston Street. So if you want to drop by and shout out and say hi, show up for the 8 o'clock show tonight, or for that matter, for the 10 o'clock show, and you can say hi. And a special greetings to Jerry Schneiderman, my best friend for 30-some-odd years, on whose sofa couch I'm staying. In fact, actually, I think I own half of it, don't I, Jerry? Hey, Jerry.
You sure do, Tom.
Yeah, great to have you here with us. Jerry is a legendary tightwad. Jerry,
I've grown about 40%.
I just have to tell people this story. This is so funny. This was back when you and I first knew each other. This was like 20 years ago, 20 some odd years ago. And there should be a cough button there someplace, Jerry. You wanted to get a second phone number for your fax machine, and you didn't want to have to pay to have it listed in the phone book, because why should you pay to have...
Nothing.
Yeah, why should... I mean, you know, they don't have to print ink, so why should it cost any money?
It should be less.
That, right. So you called up the phone company, you said, my name is...
Izzy Unlisted.
Right, Izzy Unlisted. And they took it down, and they, you know, wrote it. And then, a month or so later, some woman from the phone company doing a Lily Tomlin imitation calls up and says... We're not...
You can't do this. We're the phone company.
Right.
And I said, golly, I'm glad of that.
and she's like going off, what's your real name? Come on, we know this is a scam. And at that point, Jerry goes into this self-righteous, my name is Isaiah Unliste. I'm a French Jew. I'm tired of this anti-Semitism from the phone company. I've been putting up with this all my life. And she's, I'm sorry, Mr. Unliste. The phone company is not anti-Semitic. We're sorry. And for years, I mean, now it's all automated, but for years, I used to just get such a kick out of coming to New York and dialing 411, and they'd say, what number would you like? And I'd say, Unlisted, because it's spelled U-N-L-I-S-T-E-D.
Oh, it's U-N-L-S-T-D.
Right. They've taken a couple of vowels away from you over the years. Every couple of years, they take a vowel. So I'd call and I'd say, you know, what number would you like? Unlisted. Is who unlisted? Is he unlisted? Is who unlisted? No, is he unlisted?
Who's on third?
Right, exactly. It was a hoot. So anyway, Jerry, thanks for being here with us. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Rennie in Manhattan, New York. Welcome to the program. Hey, Rennie.
Hi. I hope I can make some sense because I'm dealing at the front lines of the medical system as a patient. Can you hear me?
I can. Yes.
But I couldn't believe you brought up diabetes. So I have juvenile several decades, and it's very painful.
Yes.
To see the media barrage trying to market adult diabetes.
Yeah, I have a friend with juvenile diabetes who now in his late 40s is going blind from it. I mean, juvenile diabetes is a really, really serious condition.
Right, but when I'm in the hospital, they confiscate my insulin. They talk to me like, what is your sliding scale? What is your sliding scale? Mm. And it's like, no, it's like being on a surfboard. It's stress. Then why are you stressed? Because I've just gotten out of 10 hours in the emergency room. And they want to not, you know, they think it's about food. But anyway, they enable the type 2, and it's not their fault, some of them. But, I mean, some of the ads are getting really bad, and I think they tack juvenile on because they want for fundraising reasons.
Sure. Well, juvenile diabetes is something everybody acknowledges. And your point is that adult diabetes is caused by big business or is enabled by big business?
I think we shouldn't be, you know, we shouldn't be calling what's in our country health care. It should be called medical care.
Or sickness care, actually. We don't do
yeah,
health care.
Because it's not really, we're not getting the right information. It's just, I mean, adult is caused by the food supply. You know, wrong lifestyle. I could go on and on. I know a lot. I've been living with this for decades. But, you know, they're trying to sell products just that make keeping it easier.
Sure. And all this corn syrup.
And now they're calling it type 1. I actually saw an ad where they're saying it turns into type 1. There is no way it turns into type 1.
Well, I suppose if it killed enough cells in the Isle of Langerhans in the pancreas, you could argue that.
Well,
you know, but that's you know, typically type 1 diabetes is caused by, they think it's caused by a viral infection during childhood that kills off that part of the pancreas.
Yeah,
right?
Well, there could be several reasons. I think it could be several diseases. A lot of girls get it right before the female hormones kick in.
Hmm.
So it could be, like you say, the plastics, too much protein in the diet.
Perhaps an autoimmune disorder.
I can tell you by observing my life, it's the cascade. It's not coming from the pancreas. So I just wanted to make, I don't know if I made my point well.
I think you did, Rennie. And
I mean, there's so much, there should be other people. You know, I don't want to be called a diabetic.
No, I understand. Rennie,
their
I'm sorry. I'm sorry we're out of time, but I appreciate your comments and thank you very much for calling. 27 minutes past the hour.
Is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio. This is absolutely mind-boggling. The New York Times reporting today They start out with the story of William Stout, how he lost his home in Allentown, Pennsylvania, to foreclosure. He could no longer make payments. It was a $106,000 mortgage. We're not talking about some, you know, some guy with $1 million McMansion. A $106,000 mortgage. And they, Wells Fargo owned the house. They put it up for sale on the courthouse steps. No one came forward to buy it, so Wells Fargo bought it from themselves, or essentially from him, but they bought it out of bankruptcy, or not out of bankruptcy, out of foreclosure, out of default, for $1. So for Mr. Stout, his debt was wiped clean. He could make a new start, right, in theory. The only problem is he got a bill from the Internal Revenue Service saying, you owe us $34,603 in taxes on the profit you just made on the $106,000 mortgage that only sold for $1. So you made $105,999 profit. Yes, we understand you lost that house because you couldn't afford to pay it, but $34,603 in taxes. This really highlights, I mean, this is so bizarre, this whole home mortgage thing. It's so bizarre. Everybody's talking about, well, we got to bail out the big companies. We got to look out for the big guys. We got to look out for the big corporations. I mean, they're the ones, you know, they're really in trouble here. What about the average person? What about the typical homeowner? They're the ones who are being screwed over and over and over again. And the Bush administration and the Republicans in Congress, no inclination whatsoever to do anything for these people. Hopefully when Congress comes back, the Democrats at least will take this on in some significant way. Morgan in Eugene, Oregon, listening on KOPT. Hey, Morgan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Congress is in recess, and our representative, Peter DePazio, came to Eugene to hold a town meeting. And he kept saying again and again how there weren't grounds to impeach. And finally, I was so angry, I got up and I yelled at him, and I said, both you and the president took oaths to defend the Constitution. The president's violated his oath. Are you going to violate yours? And then I sat back down. I went and apologized to him afterwards for yelling at him, but I'm doing my part. I'm trying to be a good citizen.
Do you think, Morgan, that most of the folks in the room with Congressman DeFazio were in support of impeachment?
When I got done with what I said, I got a round of applause from the room. So
I am guessing that,
but I got a round of applause from the room.
Yeah,
so.
I am guessing that the majority of members of Congress who went home over this break and actually held town halls, and any who didn't should not be reelected. And those who did, I'm guessing that they're getting an earful. They're getting a real earful on this stuff. And it's going on and on and on. Morgan, thanks a lot for the call. I got to move along here. Michael in Los Angeles. Hey, Michael.
Just a quick rundown on the Petraeus Report, or as I call it, the Bush's pet report and
right.
The draft. We've had 3,700 military personnel killed in Iraq. If you count the contractors, military mercenaries, it's over 5,800. That's 10% of Vietnam right there. We all remember Vietnam. A draft will not assimilate Americans back into a social contract they've spent 30 years destroying. Torture, no draft for torture, murder, dropping bombs, killing people, hundreds of thousands of them to make them your friends, or no draft for global hegemony philosophies, propping up unreliable puppet governments that have a vested interest in remaining weak.
Michael, I'm right there with you, but you could replace your no draft phrase with just about anything. Vote against, don't support, show up at your congressman's office or your congresswoman's office. Fill in the blank. The issue of a draft or a not draft is independent of the policy of the United States to a large extent. But I would submit to you, Michael, that if you had a national service program, or even worse, if you had a draft, which I don't support, you would not have many of these policies because the people would, like in the 60s, be out in the streets.
I could think about 20 that it would get the people's attention of right now. Trying to nation build in the middle of a civil war to create a democracy in name only using brute force. I mean, an enemy that exists in someone's imagination. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
No, you're absolutely right. People need to check out the documentary, brilliant documentary by Adam Curtis called The Power of Nightmares. You can Google it. You can watch it online now. And it's talking about imaginary enemies. It is incredible. Thanks a lot for the call. Marcia in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Marcia. Marcia, you are on the air. Marcia is not there. Jim in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I heard on the news today that the President Bush
is having a summit meeting with Mexico and Canada. Shouldn't that really be named a meeting of the North American Union?
In fact, actually, he's going to Canada. I'm not sure that he's going to Canada this afternoon. He's going to be there all day tomorrow. I'm not sure that Mexico's involved in that.
Yeah, it had on CNN News that it was.
Oh, really?
But
interesting.
You know what? I think we're being blindfolded on this thing, the North American Union, because none of the presidential candidates are being asked about it. Nothing's coming out of Congress or Senate about it, and we should be known about it. And I was hoping that maybe when Barney Sanders comes on your program, that you could find out what's going on with this North American Union, because in reality, it is a sellout of our country. And Tony Blair's name was brought up about being appointed to be the leader of the North American Union. You know, where does all this stuff come from without the people of the United States voting on anything and the president giving our country away?
Well, it was created by
Condoleezza Rice and George Bush.
Yeah, it was created by by Fiat, and what you're talking about is the Security and Prosperity Partnership, and I think it's www.spp.gov. Let me see if that gets us to it.
Well, if you type in North American Union, you can get everything.
Well, if you want the actual details, I mean, there's a lot of conspiracy theory stuff, and there's a lot which may or may not be right. I mean, there's a lot of paranoia around this. But you want to see the actual official U.S. government website for this, go to spp.gov. And right underneath spp.gov, it says a North American Partnership, Security and Partnership and Prosperity Partnership of North America. And, you know, just like with the Project for New American Century, these guys are not embarrassed by this. They are bragging about it. They are bragging about it. Just check it out, spp.gov. Liz in Valley Glen, California. Hey, Liz, what's up?
Oh, hi. Good morning, Tom. Earlier you were speaking about Henry Waxman's wanting to control the supplements, and I ran into
food supplements. Yes,
I ran into him at a party years ago when he first proposed it, and I jumped all over him for the same reason. I said, "Why are you trying to stop us from buying supplements?" And you know, and he said, "No, no, no. The media's gotten it all wrong. That he just wanted to standardize it, like you were speaking about the Chinese herb that."
Mm-hmm.
You took?
Yeah.
He just was trying to get a standardization. So you know when you got, it says on the label that you got so many milligrams of whatever, that it really was so many milligrams of whatever and not fillers and other garbage.
Well, Liz, I hope you're right. I have a number of friends in the natural foods industry back, for years. I've been on the board of this organization, this community for abused kids up in New Hampshire. A residential treatment facility, and we've for 29 years now used a natural foods diet, a vegetarian natural foods diet, as part of the therapy. And a lot of people in the natural foods industry support that as a charity and donate food and whatnot. And so I've known a lot of these people over the years, and a lot of them are really very, very concerned about, you know, Henry Waxman and what he's been doing. I don't profess to be an authority on this, and it's good to hear that from you, Liz.
Why don't you get him on the air? I'm sure he seems.
That's a very good suggestion. That's a very good suggestion.
Really nice, straightforward man.
No, he's one of my heroes. I mean, Henry Waxman is one of the few guys in Congress who's willing to stand up to the Republicans. I think, you know, on every other issue, I think he's brilliant. And it may well be that on this issue, he's brilliant, too. You're right. I need to learn more about it. I will. Liz, thank you very much for that. I do appreciate it. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Henry in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Henry, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm a first-time caller. I just had a quick comment. If you look at every department in the cabinet, you will find the same kind of neglect and failures that your guest at the top of the hour were talking about with FEMA and the mole and everything.
And now you got the guy who's running the Mine Safety Bureau, being an old mine, executive who had one of the worst safety records in the United States.
Exactly.
This goes beyond incompetence.
Exactly.
This is an ideology which at its core is criminal.
That's true. But anyway, my question, last week you mentioned some sort of group that advocates that George Bush just take over the government and become president for life.
Right.
And I was trying to remember what the name of that was. Could
yes,
you
it was. It actually wasn't the group advocating it. It was one of the people who wrote an article that they published on their website, which is a little different. You know, Daily Kos got attacked by Bill O'Reilly for some just random people posting things on the Kos. Marcos had no control over that. In this case, the site actually had control. They approved of this, and they put it on their website, and the group is called Family Security Matters, and their website is familysecuritymatters.org. So, you know, that's it. Henry, thanks for the call. Tom in Los Angeles. Tom. Missed the time cue there again. Stick around. We'll be right back with you, Tom. We'll be taking your call in just a minute. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Happiness runs in a circular motion. Thought is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You can have everything if you let yourself be. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs.
Happiness welcome back. Runs, 9.5 minutes before runs. The hour.
Happiness is a fine thing.
That's a fine thing. 1-866-303-2270. AirAmerica.com if you want to participate in our blog. TomHartman.com if you want to participate in the message board. Either one will get you to our live chat room. And Scott in Springfield, Illinois on the line. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I did have to take issue with you on the draft. I know you didn't support it, but you did understand that it's already too late. If Bush comes back with any kind of report saying we're not going to draw down troops, that we need boots on the ground in April, that military commanders have said that they can't sustain troop levels past April. And I've been in the military. I know it's 6 to 8 weeks of basic training, 6 to 8 weeks of AIT to get any kind of specialized boots on the ground. That means you've got to have boots in training in December in order to have boots on the ground in April. So, I mean, that means they have to have a draft either this month, next month, before November. There is absolutely no
November
choice.
Of this year.
Yep.
Do you realize what a draft will do to the Republican Party?
Exactly. Well, they have no choice in the matter, though. That's
well, I think they do have a choice, Scott. Right now they're paying $50,000 for somebody to join the Army. I think they'll just raise that to $75,000 or $100,000.
Well, yeah, but eventually...
I mean, they've got 250,000 people who have joined Halliburton, where it's arguably even more deadly than it is being in the Army,
and, true.
So it's just, you know, they'll just keep jacking the price up. They're going to do everything they can to avoid
they're going to have one. They have no choice in the matter. Because it's going to be, like I said, 6 to 8 weeks minimum basic training, and
yeah.
6 to 8 weeks to get them some kind of specialized training, just so they can either be cannoneers or whatever it is, forward observers, like they're using survey equipment to target the enemy or something. I mean, they got to have some kind of training. So, I mean, they're going to have something coming. Dan, like you said, like you're afraid of, is the surprise coming so that Bush can declare martial law. I am so right behind you on that. I am so deathly afraid that that's what it's going to be. They're going to get into Iran.
Well, see, I have a feeling, Scott, if Bush tries to declare martial law, that's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. That's going to be the thing.
Well, yeah,
that's
but
going
what can the average person do about it? I mean,
well, it's not going to take the average person. Congress will rise up against that. I really believe that.
The way they're acting, you really think Congress is actually going to finally step in and say, okay, that's enough? After
yes, I do.
They
I really
put
do.
Up with.
I really do. I think that there is a line over which or at past which or whatever this Congress will not be pushed, and I think that that's it.
I'm hoping it's coming this afternoon with that report. I'm hoping that that's the line, that when Pfizer says you have to make this report, you have to follow the law of
Congress. That's not declaring military
but it's holding
rule
Bush.
I mean, you know,
accountable.
That's, yes, I agree
and
Fred Fielding is going to spin that like, oh, you know, well,
yeah,
you know, yeah, I'm a lawyer, we've got to get some more paperwork together.
That's
no,
the first
I know
step to him saying I'm king.
I don't disagree with you, and it was due 23 minutes ago, and we'll see where it goes with us. But anyhow, Frank in L.A. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Hey, that previous caller that you had about the health care issue and the diabetes comments, I want to just underline, I agree definitely with her about us not getting the proper information. And I do believe it's because the information we've been getting is guaranteed to be socially responsible, only commercially responsible information. And we need to start thinking more of what is socially responsible. Tag your it, so to speak, as you are fond of saying. That will allow us to, you know, take care of ourselves like a democracy is supposed to be, and instead of just relying on others such as a Congress or a commercial advertising radio station such as yours to do it for us. That's irresponsible.
Yeah, yeah. Well said, and amen. Thank you very much. Ben in Monrovia, California. Hey, Ben.
Hi, Tom. 40 years ago, I started my two-year service as a conscientious objector, objecting to the being drafted into the military during the Vietnam War. And I'm really in favor of having a universal service of some kind, but have it 2 years rather than one. I think the total experience is better had a longer period in reflecting on my stint is that both my brothers also were conscientious objectors.
Well, if one of the goals of it, particularly for those who go into the military, is to prepare them to be available should the country be invaded for the rest of their lives, Jefferson's original idea, and not just Jefferson, I mean most of the founders, then you know, maybe a year is enough. I mean, I'm pretty sure in Germany it's only 1 year. I lived there for a year, and I think a lot of countries do it just as 1 year. And essentially, in exchange for that, you get free college education afterwards.
That would be a very, very good deal. Yeah, they for about 6 months as a conscientious objector, I was eligible to get veterans' educational benefits. But, of course, it took them 6 months to shoot that down.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they shoot that kind of stuff down fast. Ben, thanks a lot for the call. Paul in Clifton, New Jersey. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Tom. I think your program is a big improvement over your predecessor, but I disagree with some of your ideas. For one thing, I think a national service draft is very much against it. I think like Peace Corps, things like that, should be a person's desire to do it, not given a list of things that to pick one of these and you got to spend a year doing it. It should be your choice. This is a free country. It's not something that I don't think I.
Well, that's what I'm suggesting. I'm saying that here's a list of 15, 20, 30 alternatives. Whatever you can work in this hospital for a year. You can join the Peace Corps. You can go out and be a forest ranger. You can help build bridges. You can join the army. You know, here's a list of things. But for a year after you get out of high school, you're going to do one of these things, and then after that, you got a free college education.
Yeah, but I disagree with that. I think I got the GI Bill, but I disagree with that. I think it should be your choice what you do. As far as the country being invaded, it's been invaded once in 1812.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to invade this country.
Yeah. Well, I tend to agree with you, Paul. And in fact, what I would say is every time Bush gets out there and says, 9/11 taught us that oceans can't protect us, he is spitting in the face of James Madison and the other founders and leaders of that time who saw, the War of 1812. The reality of, tomorrow, Kristen Fife is going to be here claiming that sex education is in the hands of the world's largest abortion provider. Oh, no! And Marjorie Cohn, constitutional expert on her book, Cowboy Republic. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it! See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.